In 2024, more than 2 billion people in 50 countries are voting in elections. As they do, artificial intelligence-generated content is now widely being used. The rest of world tech site has been tracking examples of fake news. Donald Trump promising to release Imran Khan from jail in Pakistan if elected. Starbucks supposedly supporting the opposition party in Mexico. And singer Eminem, the main opposition party in South Africa. A manipulated video on Facebook shows the Indonesian vice president-elect insulting families who receive free school lunches. All of it untrue. And in the world's biggest election, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's achievements are praised using the AI-cloned voice of a popular but dead Indian singer, Mahendra Kapoor, on the ruling BJP's official Instagram account. On the other hand, on the Insta account of the Indian National Congress, India's main opposition party, there's a video of the Prime Minister singing about corruption and cronyism inside his own party. It goes on. Opposition leader Rahul Gandhi is substituted for an actor in a popular sitcom. He says, "I am useless." Viewers have commented on how lifelike it appears. And even if people aren't fooled by this yet, they can certainly be flattered. And that seems to be what the world's going to see more of. Suhasini Raj covers India for the New York Times. She's speaking to us from New Delhi. Thanks for coming on with us, Suhasini. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Jim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. The headline attached to your New York Times story, how AI tools could change India's elections. And Suhasini, by implication, all our elections, I think, if they're good enough, addressing voters by name is pretty impressive. That's being done now. Narendra Modi can speak directly to you.
So here's the thing. It's any politician or anybody can speak directly to you. AI has made it possible that you could actually address like lakhs of voters by their first names, yeah, if you so wished.
Yeah, that's amazing. And also pretty impressive is that I notice in your piece, and I'm relying on your piece for a lot of the questions, but workers for the BJP, the ruling party, create avatars and send personalized messages to voters as well, saying what sorts of things?
This BJP politician was actually getting personalized messages made to be sent across to voters. And some of them said, basically he had access to data which knew which voter was getting exactly which benefit from the government. And he wanted feedback on that. He also was urging, there were different lists for different kind of voters. There were those who were beneficiaries of the party's policies. There were those who weren't falling in that category. So depending on who he was trying to target, he would get the message tailored. For instance, he would urge many to vote for the BJP and for Mr. Modi. For others, he would ask them about the problems in their areas to be able to zero in better on what they could do, the party could do to help make it better. So there were different kind of messages in trying to kind of make it more personalized, basically, for each voter.
It's a bit scary when they don't just use your name, thanks to AI. They also know about you and talk about, in fact, what you are, what your status is.
In fact, I spoke to a few voters who had actually got these calls. And, you know, the general reaction was that they were very impressed and they were happy that the politicians actually, you know, addressing them by their name.
No, I can see that it's impressive. One big problem, though, where you are is an unregulated environment. But that kind of applies throughout the world to some extent. I mean, how would you regulate it if every politician's trying to use this technology?
So here's the thing, like, this is still like kind of sailing in, you know, uncharted waters. I mean, we've been having cases, you know, of Bollywood stars who are like really hugely popular with the Indian mandate being used in deepfakery, their videos trying to badmouth the ruling party and talking for the opposition. And both of them have come out and filed complaints for their faces and voices being used in messages to propagate the opposition's case. So yeah, so it's out there. It's still in experimental mode and it remains to be seen how far it'll go before some kind of regulations actually clamp down on it.
One BJP member, you write, paid $24,000, but that let him reach 1.2 million people. That's a bargain. This will be irresistible, won't it, using AI?
But that's right. Like, you could swing the voter who's there, but not quite out there. And once he gets a call being addressed by him in his own, by his name, could probably swing it. And he liked that idea.
Oh, yeah. I can see why. We're talking with Suhasini Raj. Getting to the election itself, Rahul Gandhi from the famed Gandhi dynasty has already lost two elections to Modi, hasn't he? It's almost certain he'll lose again and that Modi will win?
That's a given. It's just a matter of, you know, the number of seats, the margins, and the percentage by which Mr. Modi and his party wins.
Okay.
It's only about that.
What about accusations that the BJP is using state agencies to thwart its opponents? Trump, of course, is making the same accusations in the US. How much truth is there in the claims in India?
Given the fact that India and its politicians have traditionally been, you know, mired in all kinds of corruption cases, it isn't a very tough thing to find something going on with some politician to be able to unleash the government agencies to either launch cases against them or put them behind bars. So this has been happening recently where Mr. Modi's government has put at least two chief ministers who were in his opposition behind bars. It looks like it's a strategy to unleash state agencies against the opposition members to either break up their party, as their allegations are, or to get to the voter who will probably have nowhere to look once their leaders are in jail.
So there aren't many BJP-affiliated politicians being put behind bars?
No, not that we know of. I mean, probably very few, or probably, you know, negligible in comparison to those who are being targeted in the opposition, like all across India.
Has secularism failed? Because India was known for a version of it, you know, it had its ups and downs. But there are so many accusations now of surging Hindu nationalism and the claim that India's become more divided by religion and politicians are taking advantage of that. Is that all true?
That's all true, you know. We've seen that India has had a certain trajectory, like being the soft power, this country which kind of soaks in, you know, people of all kinds. And India, incidentally, probably has, I think, the second largest population of Muslims across the world. But it was the texture and the character of this country of taking them all along, going by the Nehruvian, you know, and the Gandhian way of running the country, you know, the secular way, as you said, which seems to be now have taken a U-turn under Mr. Modi, where he makes it very clear, especially this recent speech that he made, where he was calling out the Muslims as infiltrators. And this deep centralization of power, basically, when Mr. Modi has kind of significantly undermined, you know, the institutional checks and balances, which have been baked into India's demographic structure for all these decades. There's a very clear, marked U-turn from the way India has been conceived. Like, you know, Mr. Modi wants the world to get used to this aggressive new India where majoritarianism rules.
The aggressive new India. So are Muslims more disadvantaged now? I mean, he talks about welfare schemes for the poor, many of them Muslim. You know, that is all discussed in India, I know. But are Muslims disadvantaged? Because that seems like a recipe for trouble down the track.
Well, so here's the thing, to give examples of how they're not discriminating, you know, the party and the ministers give examples that, look, we're not discriminating policies, like a Muslim will get a household, will get the same amount of money as any other, that they'll get a gas connection, that they'll, you know, whatever schemes exist for the rest also exist for the Muslims, and there's no discrimination on those grounds. That's one part of it. But the other part of it is the cultural and the social exclusion, so to say, which goes unchecked, you know, which is the larger problem. I mean, on one side, you know, you can kind of attribute much of the success of Mr. Modi's party, its expansion and branding, on the branding of welfare programs, right? And its efforts to also promote itself as a pan-Hindu party, which is actively reaching out to India's marginalized castes. on the one hand, you know, Mr. Modi is trying to put opposition leaders in jail or trying to come to some kind of a deal with them, given their corruption cases. At the same time, they realize that they cannot rule a vast country as India without having the marginalized castes on their side. And I think the outreach programs, the welfare programs, are aimed at exactly that. So it seems like it's a double-pronged strategy that, look, you know, we'll do these welfare schemes, but at the same time, we're going to project ourselves as this pro-Hindu party, which is in control of India now.
The new politics, and it's not just peculiar to India, is it? It's all around the world. But the
Absolutely.
world's watching your elections to see what works in terms of AI, especially, and
Right.
what can be exported, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's all on show. Very good of you to talk to us, Suhasini, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
Suhasini Raj.